Hello and welcome to this edition of Dial the Cosmos. Today's guest is a very special man. He's written books and has plenty of knowledge on the paranormal, alien life, yet he's still my friend Philip. So, to everyone, welcome to Philip Kinsella. Hello, Philip.
Hello, Dominic, and thank you very much for having me back on your show again. It's awesome. Thank you.
I know it doesn't seem 10 minutes since we were last talking, does it?
No, that's right. Time
Time.
flies.
Oh, well, let's hope it does. Let's hope it's not so long before we're going to introduce you again in February when your new book comes out.
Ah, yes, Terrestrial Trespassers. Yes, the new one. That's already, I think it's going to be in paperback, hardback, Kindle, and audio. It's all completed and all done. So it's all been edited and all the rest of it. So I'm really looking forward to that book, and I hope other people will enjoy that when it comes out.
I'm sure they will, and I'm sure they'll look forward to reading it, as will I. The title, wow, Terrestrial Trespassers. Tell us how that actually came about. What was that based upon?
Well, I mean, my understanding, like everyone else's understanding of what we call the paranormal, life after death, survival of consciousness, aliens, cryptozoology, I mean, all of these aspects confound each and every one of us, but we know that they're true. And so I thought about, writing about not just about greys and about abductions, but also about le these levels of high strangeness and how we're trying to get our heads around it. And in a lot of cases, we have to be very careful, Dominic, because in a lot of cases, a lot of people see love and light. And I'm not denouncing that, but I've looked into the rawness of the experiences with regards to those who have come across dogmen or werewolves, whichever way you want to describe them. Sasquatch, not as much, although that falls into the same category as the dogman or werewolf, but not so aggressive. And also aliens. And I thought, well, terrestrial trespassers, because we are terrestrials on this world. And I thought, well, these beings appear to be trespassing. Now, I know people say, no, that's wrong. But through our terminology, that's the way I see it, that because we are programmed to an extent to accept the model of life and reality as we view it, as we experience it. But there are larger worlds, larger dimensions, which are coming in to remind us that that is not the case. So that's how I got the title for the book. It kind of like rang in my head, and I thought, that sounds a bit catchy.
Yeah, it's gripped my interest straight away, Philip. What are werewolves and are they real?
Now, that is a very good question, and I will state for the record that I have spoken to a few people, one researcher, a brilliant researcher, Paul Sinclair from Bempton, who's a UFO and paranormal and cryptid researcher as well. Yes, apparently they're known more as dogmen that are normally and have been experienced in America in the national forests, where a lot of strange activity occurs. But it's not only within the national forests within these geographical locations around the world. They also occur in France, going back, very famous cases back then, and here in England. And when you're hearing this from federal officers who have been in front of these beasts, it changes everything. So, a lot of information is now coming to the fore about these levels of high strangeness within remote regions. What I wanted to find out, Dominique, was what was unique about these certain geographical locations which prompted such unusual activity. And as any good researcher like yourself and many others will know, that it's not just about the sightings of UFOs or some form of alien interaction. These areas also promote ghosts, discarnate voices, strange orbs, black cats, werewolves that we've just mentioned, or dogmen, and Sasquatch. So this is where I think a lot of this research has taken me, because when you're hearing this from, real strong, minded individuals, it's telling you it's real. So the dogman sightings, the werewolf experiences that people have had, is very much a reality. Absolutely. No different from the Sasquatch as well.
Okay, some interesting points you raised there, Philip. And of course, it brings to mind a few questions for me.
Yes.
First question would be, is these things that we're seeing, they seem to come into the consciousness, and they've seemed to come into the consciousness very much more recently, haven't they? I mean, I can quote things like the Mothman and the Rake. We seem to be very much more aware of these particular entities just in the last 10 years. So, could it possibly be the things that we look at as paranormal, things like ghosts, poltergeists, werewolves, the Rake Man, are entities, sentient entities that actually live on this world alongside of us, but in dimensions that we cannot see, but we can actually see the results of them? So we actually see the trail, the evidence, the footprints, the movement. Sometimes people go missing in locations on a regular basis. So we see the results, but we haven't yet come to understand what it is that we're actually seeing.
Absolutely, and totally understandable. I mean, I always use the analogy of the mobile phone. You have the physical apparatus that people think is the phone, but the phone itself has a signal, and that signal is actually the phone. Without the signal and a little bit of power, the phone is defunct. And what happens is that the signal is operating on a higher frequency that our senses can't detect. Just giving an example here. And as soon as that signal hits the physical hardware, bang, there we are. It seems to have life and we've got it. So, on a theoretical level, there are several hypotheses that we can take into consideration with regards to these ghosts that we consider as like ethereal in nature, but actually are solid within their own realms, and obviously can come into our matrix on a temporary basis before returning back to their realm that we can't see or sense. So it's interesting. I think we can take the analogy that these beings, whether or not be the Mothman or the Sasquatch or the werewolf or the Rake Man, that they are in their own dimensions of reality. Now, because I did speak to another researcher and I said, well, you tell me what bar they're all hanging out at, and I'll go down there and we'll have a chat with them all. You know, we had a joke and laugh about it. You know, we'll all
Of
go down
course.
there, Dominic, and have a chat with them and say, well, what's going on, lads?
Yes.
Let's see what's going on. But
I want my invite.
we just find the zip and pull it off. We have a great sense of humor, which is much needed within this subject matter. But there are several hypotheses that I did consider within terrestrial trespassers. I wanted to find out where these beings were, and I think it's safe to assume that we are now dealing with some type of interdimensional hypothesis, as opposed to people thinking they're coming from deep space and arriving here. I think we're now beginning to change the way that we're thinking about this whole structured and very strange system of altered reality. One of the other interesting areas is that I do agree with you. I mean, back in the 80s, when I was a kid growing up, I mean, these subject matters were taboo. I mean, you went to the local library, which I always went to do my project on Roswell. When I went to the section on the occult, which is where the section was with regards to UFOs and that, it was in the occult section. There were very few titles on there. I think Roswell was one book, and there were a few others, one on the Loch Ness Monster and something else. But now the attitudes have changed and morphed. I think now, because we're becoming more aware of the fact that the system that we serve has tried to, in my opinion, subjugate this reality and program us on a very basic level from childhood growing up, telling us that this is real and that's not real. But the phenomena hasn't gone away, and it's really amazing to see that there are more now experiences and encounters that people in the past were forbidden not to talk about. The media were really hard on, don't report this, don't report that. And I think now, because there is such an influx in technology and media outlets, that people talk now. And this is why I think that in terms of our understanding of these beings, whatever they are, and I will be going into your point, your question there, is now coming to the fore. Years ago, if you said to someone, well, you know, I've seen a werewolf in the 80s, they'd look at you as if you had become a werewolf yourself. They'd look at you crazy. Or I've seen a Sasquatch. And because a lot of people now are speaking and opening up, because before park rangers, for instance, were told to keep quiet, and witnesses also to keep quiet about their experiences with these beasts that come from somewhere else. So it is interesting, where are they coming from? I mean, where exactly are they all hanging out? So my understanding is that it's interesting, isn't it, how the Yeti, the Sasquatch, most notably also the werewolf, started off within mythology as some kind of mythos. But we have to ask ourselves, was it? Were these beings reported way back and fueled the public imagination to the point where now this phenomena is representing itself on this level of physical integration? So people will tell you how it is and what it is. And I will say to you, Dominique, as a friend, we don't know what it is. We don't know what they are. No. All we know is the phenomena is real.
Let's take the Sasquatch. Let's take Yeti, the Abominable Snowman. Yeah. I mean, you know, so many names in so many different cultures. And the people, Tibetans, they were very much the first to recognize the Abominable Snowman, as they called it. And there was a monastery way up in the hills near Mount Everest that actually had a hand of a Sasquatch. And they used to charge people to go in and see this hand. Now, that was something that was claimed to be a real hand from a real Sasquatch, because, you know, I mean, a lot of people believe that the Sasquatch has a cloak of invisibility, is able to vanish into a different dimension or be able to cloak itself. But this hand was actually a real hand. And a person actually took the hand and took a finger off the hand and had it processed and tested for DNA, because we can do that now. Only the last sort of 20 years that we can do it. And reports came back that the DNA was human. It was a human hand. So mythology has a lot to do with a lot of the things that we actually are known about or that we are knowing about. Doesn't make anything real or less real. It just makes it a mystery until we discover. And I think that a lot of the things that we will be discovering is wrapped around the space that we don't see. So
that's correct.
Yeah. You think dark matter?
Yes.
Don't even know where to start with dark matter. The James Webb telescope, now it's actually pointing out there's a lot of things in space that we perhaps hadn't even calculated for. And that's in space. So just think of our planet. There's so much we do not know about our planet. We don't even know what's at the bottom of the oceans.
No.
Yeah, I mean, we know more what's on the moon than what we know about our oceans. So there's so much that we do not know about this phenomenon that has kept it a mystery for probably since people started writing or passing on tales or talking. And that goes across every culture. I talk about the Himalayans. I can talk about the Alaskans, and they talk about their creatures and their animals that are mythological. They're in their myth. They're legends about where they are. And they still have tales about these big hairy creatures that they report to be Sasquatches or Yetis that take away their children. There's the Kraken they talk about in the sea. There is a giant octopus. There are so many things that maybe as technology becomes much more available, we're able to see things through night vision scopes and start seeing energy signatures and heat signatures rather than just what's there, then we'll start to see maybe creatures that are as sentient as you and me, but we've always looked upon them as being maybe, I don't know, our ancestors wrongly, because maybe our ancestors are just souls and ghosts do exist, but they're not what we think they are.
That's right. And I also hypothesize that with this subject matter, which is complicated because we've separated each phenomena into its own category. Sasquatch here, werewolf, dogman there, UFOs here, aliens there. One of the common denominators, which is very interesting about this phenomena, is the fact that all of these beings use telepathy. All of them initiate, in a lot of cases, telepathic exchange. Now, It's interesting going into the mythology section of this, I think, and this has been addressed in my work before and also in Terrestrial Trespassers, I will highlight this. We don't know who created us, and we know that mind molds and creates. It does. Everything around us has been created through some kind of construct within the mind. And I hate the word imagination. But when we pass over, we understand that there are varied levels, interdimensional levels of reality. And certainly in near-death experience research, the person who is going through the transitional stage of removing themselves from the body and then going through the light down through a tunnel and then communicating with their loved ones through, via telepathy. Communication is very easy and very understood. There is a sense of timelessness, and the world that the soul has moved into is more real than the one they left behind. But get this, this is interesting. Whatever has affected the physical body in order to create that passing, let's say that the individual is suffering from cancer and has died and then gone through this experience, when the person returns back, in a lot of cases, back to the physical housing of their body from the realm that they've come from, they are, in a lot of cases, healed and changed. So we are seeing, I think the way that we're viewing this is that most people think, the UFOs are ethereal and wispy in nature, and ghosts are ethereal and wispy. They're not really real. You can't really touch them. But interaction is possible. That much is the same with an abduction when an individual is taken and taken through the wards and doors. And whatever is affected to their body in that state that it's brought into to make a correction level with the being, so they're on the same level interaction, when it comes back, they have an implant in them. So I think that our understanding of how we view ourselves as humans has to be taken into question, and especially with mind. And there is another interesting area here that I'd like to just touch upon, and most people will reject that hypothesis immediately. We create through the mind. And as I understand it from the research that I've done, there are certain levels on the other side where anything that is created and strong enough can become manifest on the other side, and takes on a life of its own. And that is done in part of the astral. A lot of research into ancient texts and documents consider this to be a reality. I wondered whether or not that, you know, are we dealing with something that we ourselves have created that now has become manifest through a belief or a breathing in a life of this reality, and it folds itself, comes into our state of reality, because we have so many of them. We have the fairy folk, you have the werewolves, you have the Sasquatch. And the list goes on and on and on.
Let's discuss manifestation.
Yes, Philip, yes. Because I know a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, let's just open it up a little bit, because when we start talking about thought becoming reality, we start talking about manifestation and creating. And yes. Couldn't it be that the world of the etheric, the world that is different dimension to us, the world that maybe we shift into, is a thought-based place dimensionally, and that those places where thought is the most dominant force is where thought is created? So having the thought that we can go into these different dimensions, that we can go into a place where we can manifest, then all we have to do, surely, is have the idea and then wait for that seed to grow, for it to manifest into something that is a reality or becomes reality.
And so, totally accepted.
Yeah, absolutely. And that will make sense where science fiction normally leads the way. You know, a lot of things that we're now looking at, like teleportation and warp travel, that is becoming a leader of what our technology is going towards. These creatures that, you mean, Mothman actually appeared in one of the comics, didn't it? Back in the '50s, before it was actually seen as reality. Same with the werewolves and Dracula and all these imaginary creatures that we so readily now see walking our streets. We see, pictures of rake men walking across the road.
That's right. Oh, absolutely.
So the reality is we're creating the world that we're living in. And is that really what is happening here?
Yes, that is a very good question. And I can answer to a degree through my own personal experiences with regards to manifestation. Two of them, one with the UFO and one with a dead friend. And this answered a lot of things for me going back all those years ago in terms of an article I had published called Spirits in the Material World. But much later did I then investigate on a deeper level this process of manifestation. It is interesting, isn't it, that the system that we serve, and I must go back to this point in question, we are all programmed systematically to see the world in a very basic light and agree that there is a lot of things out there that we do not readily yet understand, even through our scientific applications. Now, thought is interesting because when I had researched a little bit on Rendlesham, with Brenda Butler, but before I actually met Brenda Butler in the forest,
back, Philip, Rendlesham. Just tell the people that are listening that don't know what Rendlesham actually was, because okay. We both do, but they won't.
Rendlesham Forest is the housing of Bentwaters and Woodbridge, US and British headquarters. Back in 1980, there was an experience with the military troops over the Christmas period of UFOs that seemed to compromise and were witnessed by many of the crew members there, the staff there as well. And it's very famous here in England. It's known as England's Roswell. Okay. And of course, this is in Suffolk in England, which is about 2 hours' drive away from where we live in Bedfordshire. And so we had performed an experiment, a mental experiment, a week before we went up to the forest back on the 8th of June 1998 to see if we could summon a UFO. And that is exactly what we did at precisely 10:15 p.m. at night in the forest on the 8th of June 1998. We summoned a UFO. My argument was this intelligence aware of our intentions and had shown itself to us the way, the way it had? Or were we co-creators to this experience? The same a year later in 1999, I had a friend who died of cancer in June 25th, 1999. And a book, I went into an old-fashioned bookshop, secondhand bookshop, and a local author there in Bedford ran that bookshop. And he was always knowing that I was going into the occult section. And of course, when I went to the occult section to dig out any books I could get my hands on for a couple of quid, this book fell on the floor called Reunions by Dr. Raymond Moody, an eminent neurologist and near-death experience researcher. So I took the book home and read it. And it said about how you can contact the dead by using a mirror. I performed the experiment. I think it was a little bit later in 1999, and always in the winter with me. In the winter of 1999, when I was sitting in the kitchen after coming back from a hard day's work, and where our kitchen has the conservatory glass doors and then the outer glass doors, there's a kind of like the garden. It's all sealed up with a big, huge, big wooden gate that's locked. And the side to the house has the door to the garage, which is locked. This young chap turned up and turned to look at me. And it was my friend who died of cancer. And I remembered, I've written about this, it's documented. And I was so stunned because there's a little bit of a story behind that about him being aware of my interest in the paranormal and life after death. And I asked him before he died if he'd be able to show himself to me. So these two episodes, both separate, one with UFOs and one with the dead, and I remembered seeing a medium many years ago who said to me that she said that you would be trying to bridge the gap between the psychic and UFO phenomena. So answering your question there, absolutely amazing that in terms of manifestation, for instance, they were there. They were there. I couldn't tell you if I could physically reach out and touch them or my hand would go through them. I couldn't tell you that because I wasn't near enough to them.
First one first, Philip. I want to take you back to Rendlesham.
Oh, yes.
And your UFO experience.
Yes.
Surely, if you actually summoned it, it wasn't a UFO. You knew what the object was. Wouldn't you call it something different? Is there something different you would think of it as?
No, at that point, because the area is known for UFO activity and, of course, strange phenomena, we had the intention of bringing what they term as a UFO to us. The object itself that appeared was quite remarkable. It was like a pyramid, and it had a gap and a circular undercarriage. And the pyramid top part of it was lit from the inside. It didn't make any sound and produced all these different colors. And the bottom part, it was like a witch's hat, but with a separated, where the rim was separated. This part was moving one way with a bank of blue lights, and the pyramid was moving the other like clockwork. I say UFO because it's the only way, the only terminology that I can use to
Okay.
describe what we were seeing. To my mind, it was an unidentified flying object. I mean, I had no other way of describing it.
Okay, you just described to me something similar to the Glocken, the bell, which the Nazi Germans were experimenting with back in 1944, just before the end of the war.
Oh, right.
Although it was a bell, it was dome shaped, not witch's hat shaped, but that was also discovered. It apparently went through time and actually
Oh.
landed in 1968 in America, and it's documented the actual retrieval of Le Glocken actually from a place in America. But
Oh, I
that's
didn't know that.
okay, well, we'll talk about that one day when we're sort of
Yes.
being social, Philip. The other thing is your friend that you saw as a ghost,
Yeah,
who was
well,
there
yeah.
with you, yeah, did he speak to you?
No communication whatsoever. That was the one thing that I did not have. No communication. There was no mental communication. You see, before he had cancer, and before he died, he had read a redundant manuscript of mine that later was published by a publishing company called Reaching for the Divine. It spoke about life after death, and I knew he was dying, and I approached him and said, would you do me a favor? Would you be able to show yourself after you died? And he looked at me and said, well, how do you expect me to do that? And I said, well, I don't know. I you'll find a way. And he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll beam down like they do on Star Trek, because he likes Star Trek. Now, it was really strange. I think with any form of these paranormal activities that occurs with us all individually, we're all unique. And I think it's a personal journey as well of revelation to you as the soul, as the person going through this experience. And I was a bit of a hard head here. It took a lot to get through to me that this is what's happening. I've softened and mellowed quite a lot through the years, Dominique, I have. But when I went to the shop that Richard Wildman, he was an author on books on Bedfordshire, a well-known man in his second-hand bookshop, and that book fell on the floor, Reunions, and I bought it and I read it. It kind of was really very amazing, because when Gareth appeared outside the house through the glass of the doors and where the garage was, he had his white t-shirt, blue jeans and cap on. He looked kind of like he when he was just getting the illness. That's it, not the full extent of when he had it completely, but like he was still recover like he was recovering from it. But there was no communication, but he looked directly at me and he put his hands up as if to say, well, what's the problem? Here I am, or this is me. But he was as solid as I'm seeing you. There was no wispiness. However, when he did go, he said they would beam up like they do on Star Trek, and it has been documented. He seemed there was all these sparks, like little lights, and I remembered I was so shocked because I'd gone up, and I pulled the conservatory door back, went into the conservatory, and opened the back doors, and he was gone. There was nothing there, that for me was remarkable. And thinking back to the experiment that I performed with the mirror gazing, experiment that Dr. Raymond Moody has highlighted within his book. He calls it the amphitheater of the mind. When I did that experiment, all I got through the mirror at that point before he turned up was a picture of Thomas the Tank Engine's face. And I thought, well, I've got nothing linked with Thomas the Tank Engine. I know he was created by a reverend, also, an author, but had no idea what that meant. But then, of
Let's
course, it was afterwards that it occurred.
talk about this experiment. Let's go into a little bit of detail because it
Yes,
fascinates me. I know that
absolutely.
there's lots of cases with mirrors. There's lots of mirrors are used throughout
Yes.
mythology, aren't they? I mean, scrying in pools of
Yeah.
water. They seem to occur regularly throughout. So, can you describe what this professor documented in this book in order to make that contact possible using mirrors?
Yes, he documented a lot of historical references, most notably the Egyptians, and going through the epochs of these mirror gazing. Water also was well known, through dark chalices, so there was kind of like a reflection upon it, the surface. He calls it the amphitheatre of the mind. And the experiment that I performed had you, well, I got a very long, tall, thin mirror. And one you could buy down one of the shops there. And I would lean it. So I was sitting in a chair, a very darkened room in the living room. This is where I did it. And I leaned it back so that when I was staring into part of the mirror that was at an angle, I was not seeing my face. I was seeing a reflection of the ceiling. It's important. And then what you do is you think within your mind about who you would like to come through that mirror. Your eyes will deflect sometimes because it's quite dark. They do say about having too little tea lights, but be very careful to make sure that those tea lights don't burn anything or catch light of anything. But I did it in semi-darkness, so that left the curtains open, so there was some kind of reflection. And your eyes will flip here and there, and then you have to return back. When I did the experiment, I was in a very you have to be in a very calm state of relaxation, and also getting in tune with your feelings of how you felt about the individual that you want to come through, the memories, the experiences that you had of the chats that you had, the times that you spent together. And then, of course, what happened after that, when I did see the image of Thomas the Tank Engine's face coming through, I thought, I'm going to put this away. Now, Dr. Raymond Moody did this experiment and it worked successfully. However, the person he wanted to come through, and it normally happens, it works when you've completed the experiment and put the mirror away. He was in his living room, and when he'd completed his experiment, and of all the people that he wanted was his, I believe, forgive me if I've got this right, but his mother-in-law, I think. And he and his mother-in-law never got on. And when she came into the room, she actually spoke to him through his mind. Of course, when I had the interaction with my friend who passed over through the glass of the conservatory doors, there was visual processing that was all there, but no verbal or mental exchange whatsoever, nothing of that kind. So he calls it the amphitheater of the mind, and he created these labs in the United States of America where he would I don't know if they still do it now, but they have these big mirrors, and the person goes through this week's course of getting ready and getting their mind in set to communicate with someone who's crossed over, looking through photographs, memorabilia, all this type of thing, talking about them, and then going through the experiment where they go into this chair. And of course, then they are left in the room, I think, for about 40 minutes or an hour to see. And a lot of people have had some remarkable results with regards to this process. You have to be dedicated in wanting it to happen. It can't be half-hearted. It must come from the heart. It must come from the soul. Because some people don't put enough energy into something. But it's interesting that the experiments, one with the life after death or the connection link and the UFO, they were as solid and as real as you and I. And as I said, if I had been near my friend, would I have been able to touch him, or would my hand have gone through him? I have no idea. I
Okay.
assume that my hand would have gone through him, perhaps, because we're on different levels of vibration. But what's interesting, and I've got to say this about the dead, they can do it. They
Right.
can do it. That was proven to me.
Okay. Couple of questions, Philip, as you probably figured out by now. Couple of things I would sort of ask. First is, could this be done with anybody throughout history? If I wanted to contact Alexander the Great,
Oh.
could I study him? Could I look him up? Could I read all about the written history from the Greeks and the actual places that he visited and the lives that he had with his different partners? Could I do that and then use this mirror thing to go and communicate?
I don't see why not. I mean, at the end of the day, there is a recording of all of human experience. You are recording, I am recording a life experience. They also did within the past. Why would it be any differently for someone who was, say, in the 12th century, 13th, 14th,
Okay.
15th? It doesn't matter. Because the energy or the recording or the information for that individual will still be attainable, I think, from the other
So,
side.
okay. So let me ask you, Philip, before we go past this. Time, a linear line or a circle?
Well, I'm not sure about the linear. And I will say to you that my understanding is that while we are locked temporarily in these biological spacesuits, we are afforded a small amount of time for a recording. Once we are removed from that, I don't think there is a sense of time the way that we see it, because we're human-based, we're in a physical, or what we believe to be a physical universe. But of course, a lot of that is changing now in terms of our understanding of the universe. So I think time is interesting. I'm not denouncing time, because it is important. We have a timeline here. It's what makes us human. It's what we understand. But I think that on the outside, there is no time. I think, you know, when people say that everything's in the now, I kind of understand that to a degree, where my understanding, if I may say this, and I know it's a little bit way out there, I have this romantic idea that all of us, each and every one of us, are recording an experience, and that we are part of the Godhead, the one, the source of all that is and ever will be. And we are like explorers coming out, separated from source, to go through these varied experiences, that the one is trying to understand more about itself through the extension of us as we are through it. So I think we're going through a shared process of creation, and how fascinating perhaps to learn that, you know, we aren't the only force that is part of this process of experience. So when we go back to source, there is no time. There is no understanding of time. There is a recording of experiences. But you know, I would find it very hard to answer that question. But my understanding is that when people say, well, there is no time, they're going to say, well, where are you then? And it's like, well, they are.
Let me just come in. So if I was to paraphrase what you've just said to me, I would say that you're saying that being a human being, a mortal, is defined by
yes.
the timeline that we live on.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. So we have a time limit here, but that is in a human body, in a physical system of reality. I think once we are removed from that, there is no time.
Okay.
Although, you know, yeah.
That clears it up, because I want to understand where that came from. I'm
yeah.
also very interested, right, in electronic voice phenomenon.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. So for anybody that knows about electronic voice phenomenon, EVPs,
yes,
right, imprints of voices, even tapes, the
yes.
stone tape theory that
yeah.
was put out there, is still a theory that the surroundings that we actually live in record our energy signatures, and that they can be replayed. So it's just not us, it's just our signature of us, right? Well, it's a what is actually
a recording, called,
yeah,
I guess.
And it was actually put out there through a book back in 1960 that talked about a stone cottage in Scotland that had voice recordings etched into the walls. And that when people broke through the seal of the cottage, they actually activated the frequencies of these recordings. And that came to be known as stone tape theory, which could explain some replay ghosts or some places that you walk through. Like if you walk through the underground in London, you would walk through time zones, and you could walk through imprints of people's energy that died horribly through throwing themselves under trains or through bomb blasts in the Second World War, and that you could be affected by walking into a place that had these imprints, these EVPs in there. It really does blow the imagination apart that we can still feel the imprints or hear the voices of people that have gone before us. You know what I mean? What would you add to that? You know, was there something you had the experiences of electronic voice phenomenon that you can actually
yeah.
go into?
Like you, I mean, I'm not a man of a jack of all trades, but I will tell you that my psychical research and UFO research had always and has always been paramount. Electronic voice phenomena, yes, well, I've had experiences with that, and I can prove this phenomenally with a psychic experiment that we performed through a workshop with many other people, and we had some troops coming through from Afghanistan. And the conversation that we had with two of these men within the group had some of them crying with one of these electronic voice boxes that we got. I've got two of them down there,
Okay.
the voice boxes that I have, the EVP voice boxes. So I do agree absolutely that an impression or a record of traumatic events or even mundane events can be recorded within our physical structure, like an onion, the skin of an onion that you peel away, and there's more and more there. And if you upset the balance or the energies of one area, that might open up these memories, these experiences. We look at photographs of our past, of the relatives that we had, and I always think about this in my head. There is a photograph of like your grandmother or your grandfather or your auntie or whoever going back, and they've crossed over now. And I know that they're okay because they had communication through mediums themselves and through me with my grandmother, my maternal grandmother. But you're looking at these images, and what's really frightening to a degree, and I say frightening, is because you were there walking that timeline with them at that point, and now it's gone. The only way that we of that energy, what you're saying about impression of energy with people. I think wherever you live, your energy is enmeshed within the area, the surrounding area. Your home is your home. People will understand how it feels when they come into your residence. Some people have good impressions, some people have bad feelings. And it's you, it's coming from your auric energy field. It's you're impressing this upon the place. There was a medium I know, she was a healer, a really good healer, a crystal healer, very rich lady. She'd had crystals everywhere. Amazing. She did an initiation on me many years ago. When she died, and I went back to her house because I was very kindly asked to take her funeral. It was dead. It was all her energy had gone. So with her, she'd taken that with her. It was really strange feeling that her essence was no longer there. But some people do leave their essences, I think, in terms of recordings, murders, historical events, most definitely. And can you imagine going back and seeing that if you're able to? So there is a record, not just here, but also on the other side of these events. And sometimes it takes a sensitive to really tune in or home in on them.
Okay, you've said this several times, Philip. You said there is a record of
Yes.
them
Yes.
on the other side.
Yes.
Would you just like to explain your thinking behind that? Because again,
Yeah, okay.
it
My
fascinates me.
understanding is that every single thing is recorded. Not one thing goes without being recorded. And it appears to me, or it feels to me, like there's a record. They call it the Akashic Records. People think it's some type of book that's on the other side, but the Akashic Records are a place where all information of all history, not just on Earth but other areas, is stored. Now, anyone would think, "Oh, what a load of old rubbish," but it's interesting how those on the other side, when they communicate through to a medium, have access to information about the individual that's having the reading. So, they're getting this through from that side of life through to here. And even in people that say the person that's having the reading through the medium doesn't really know the person that's communicating, only slightly, but that person still has recorded information about the individual they're coming through to. So there must be some accessing of information on some level other than where we are here on this side of life.
Okay. Can I offer you another theory for that?
Of course, please do.
It's something that I've been looking at recently and I'm very interested in now,
Yes.
being a medium myself. Soul to soul communication, that souls can communicate one to the other, to the other, to the other. So we each have our own soul. Our soul is literally a record of every lifetime that we've ever gonna or have lived, and that when our soul departs, transfers out of our body, transcends, if you like, or goes to that next dimension, all the information is kept within that particular soul. So it's like a blueprint of everything that we've ever been.
Yes.
And every life that we've ever had. So when a soul can communicate to another soul, you can access all that information. So in a way, wouldn't the soul be reacting as an Akashic record? And
wouldn't it
simplify the whole process of having it to be stored in a place or in another dimension, that those records are stored within us all?
Yes, and this is the question. It's fascinating within its symmetry. We can only go by theoretical content because we don't know. But the information is recorded somewhere. Soul to soul, yes, absolutely, I agree. Or another soul to another soul, bringing information through, like a domino effect.
Yeah. It's how I feel mediums work.
Yes, I
think there are some very clever mediums out there, and I think there's some very good mediums out there. And the clever mediums have a vibrational frequency that allows them to collect this information. And so what they're doing is they're picking up a record of who that person once was. And of course, the frequencies are within people. I see it within the auras, within the energy fields and the frequencies. So why wouldn't that information be freely available? But it's not a conversation with somebody that's passed over. It's a record of that person.
Yes.
And you're accessing that record. A bit
Absolutely.
Like a replay or a EVP or a place where that information can be available. And that's why the mediums that are able to do this are able to access that information without asking questions, without being at all imposing themselves onto that person. And they just give out the information. Now, that's where I think this is. I don't think it's about a spirit world. I cannot see how or why the universe would complicate everything by having lots of worlds that mimicked this world. I can't see that personally. I'm willing to look at it and explore it, but I think the universe is a very uncomplicated place.
Yes, and I think also that our understanding, as such as it is with regards to the other side, conscious survival, we don't know what happens in the core of the experience. I've always said that. And what fascinates me more than anything is the process of incarnation or reincarnation. And I do joke, I'll say to you here, Dominique, just to make lighten the mood a little bit here, I've always said that when I get to the other side, I'm going to get a refund. I'm going to say to them, what on earth was that all about? And can you please keep me as far away from the reincarnation chamber as possible?
I'll counteract your lightheartedness, and I was thinking the other day, wouldn't it be awful, right, if when you passed over into spirit, that there was no sort of link, there was nothing, you just went into nothingness, and the next thing you knew, you were laying in a cot looking up thinking, oh no, not again.
Oh no. And I hope that's not the way it goes, because I want a choice.
But can you imagine that whole feeling of, oh no, here we go again? And I was just thinking about some of the famous people that have passed over this year into, you know, for instance, there's a few very well-known celebrities that have gone into spirit after having very long, happy lives. You know, Tony Bennett, for instance, and yeah, he was nearly in his 89, 90 or something. So he had a lot of years here. And because there's no time, reincarnation would happen in an instant, because we've got nothing to compare it to, have we?
Oh, so, I do hope there's another side. I really am hoping, Dominique, that there is another level that we go to before we come back down here again.
Well, it's an interesting thought that there may not be, that we may not have any control over it. And before we realize it, we're going back through either the same life or a different life. And I've researched and done a lot of work on this because I'm really interested in it.
Good.
And I've met people that have had recall of going through the same lifetime until they do something that they had to do. And they may have gone through the same life, time
yes.
after time after time. So in a way, there's a message there, isn't there? Do
yes,
what you
right.
need to do now. Mm. Don't put it off.
Yeah. And, you know, we cannot discount anything, because if anyone does, then they're, you know, we have to be open to all forms of speculation, because no one really knows. And the same with elements of the paranormal field of investigations, the same with life after death. We just don't know. We have some ideas. You know, we have these examples where people have these amazing experiences, but I will agree with you there. No, try not to be too forceful with your opinions and say this is how it is.
Exactly. And the nicest thing is that, no, we don't. Nobody really knows. They have their own truth. And if you have your own truth, the best thing you can do with your own truth is talk amongst like-minded people. And open
yes.
up that conversation. So when the conversation gets opened, you can start pushing the boundaries a little bit further. So we can discover new knowledge through interaction between ourselves.
Yes, that's correct. Wonderful. I love the way that you describe that. It's beautiful, Dominic. Absolutely beautiful.
It's so important. I want to just move it into a bit of a scarier place just for a second. Right, because, you know, I had my mind, I've just been doing a lot of research on Halloween and Halloween stories, and I've been writing some ghost stories, which you're going to read one for me in the coming month or so.
Yes,
which we're going to do as a Halloween special. That's an exclusive on this show tonight. We're going to do we're going to do six Halloween stories that are going to be very special, real life, true ghost stories. And I've just come across a really, really frightening case of a mimic ghost. Now, have you ever come across a mimic ghost?
No, never.
Nor me, right? And it scared the living daylights out of me when I started researching it, because it's part of a poltergeist that can mimic a voice of an individual.
Oh, good Lord.
So can you imagine it? Like someone close to you calling you.
No. I don't think that I could deal with that, Dominique. No. That is a little bit freaky, isn't it?
Well, to me, I mean, I love looking at things that I haven't come across before. I love to find it. And I unearthed a couple of situations. I found a place in Alaska where two men were working on the road, and they were working, picking up litter. One was 100 yards ahead of the other one. And the guy who was behind heard his mate say, "Just come over here," in his voice. And he was calling him from the woods, which was up this wooded hill. And he looked around and he could see his mate was 100 yards down the road. He could still see him, but he heard his voice coming from the left of him, trying to entice him into the woods.
Now, I will tell you something interesting here as well, because you get a lot of cases as well, too, in that are most notably not only in England and here, but in America. And I watch a lot of these podcasts because I'm very interested in paranormal activity and keeping up to date with things. And you hear this where the individual is being enticed to go outside by a voice of someone they think they know. One was a young lady who was her parents had gone away on a holiday. She was in a remote area of the land. She was looking after her parents' dogs. And, you know, she'd had a few strange experiences and a very scary one later on. And then this voice that she thought was her father was calling her and asking her to go outside. And especially in cases of the national parks where people have reported hearing this voice and they're almost directed to go, like the voice wants them to go somewhere. That I do understand. But for a poltergeist to actually, and it could even be poltergeist activity doing that as well, you don't know, do you?
Well, this is what I'm looking at within it, because it's called a mimic ghost.
Oh, I'll have to write that down.
Yeah, it's really interesting for me, Philip, because it was something that It would scare the living daylights out of me
Oh,
if
yeah.
I thought. And this case I've researched, I'm not going to go too much into detail on here right now, because I'm writing it into
Good.
a ghost story that's going to be a little bit hair tingling. It's very, very real to this person, and it was a real experience that he went through. And not only did he go through that experience, a few weeks later, his sister went through the same experience.
Oh, my Lord.
So it repeated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will tell you also that I have had experiences with EVP, with seeing a dead friend manifested through an experiment, being in the presence of a real poltergeist, a real life poltergeist. Well, I say in the presence, we didn't see it, but what it did was quite effective. And so, you know, and had communication through mediums and also through the dead. And then, of course, like you, you know, yourself involved in that, having my toes in kind of like two worlds, as it were, what 2 feet, so in two worlds, one in ufology, one in psychic phenomena, and now dipping in there, into the cryptozoology department. So when we're touched by the singularity, any one of us, you find that there's this deep need to find out the truth of what's going on. And this changes you. It molds you, because the system says, well, no, Philip or Dominic, no, you don't want to believe in that because it doesn't exist. And you're like, well, either I'm lying or you're lying. And I want to know which one of us is lying.
Yeah.
And then we find out now that, well, I think we can work it out, that there is a lot of things that's going on. But how fascinating for you. And for that case, it's chilling.
I'm looking at finding the reality of where.
Oh, yes.
Are. Yeah, I mean, I'm not interested in people making things up or enhancing.
Oh, no. You get that. You know, I haven't got time for that. The
not
truth
me.
And the integrity and the honor and the research is what's important.
I know.
You know, and even though after all these years, I'm still left with a blank page, I make everyone laugh. But it's exciting because the phenomena is there and we're all trying to put our heads together to try and work it out. And I think that there's joy in that, in sharing.
No.
Sharing and not like, well, I'm the one that's got exclusive rights to the phenomena and I'm this. No. We are all part of that process. And
knowledge,
I think on an individual basis, that is very important.
Knowledge belongs to everyone.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
And we should reach to go for that knowledge so we can enhance and live alongside the things that we don't know.
Correct.
There's the thing with EVPs is I've come across cases of people being rung up, being phoned by somebody that's passed.
Oh, I've heard of stories of that. Yes,
well,
I have heard. I've never experienced that.
I can tell you a true story that happened to me. I was on the phone to my friend John when I was 18. He was my friend. I'd known him for 4 years previously, and I'd been away. I'd been working on a radio ship in the middle of the North Sea.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was a DJ for a time, and I used to go away 3 months at a time and do that. And then I used to come home. And on the ship, you had no communication. So the first thing I used to do when I got back to shore for my rest and recuperation, as they called it, I would actually ring a few people. I would go and find a phone box, ring a few people and go and talk to them. And then I would go back to where I was living and they would ring me. And I had a conversation with my friend John for half an hour on the phone. And I went into my local spiritualist church where I met John a few years previously and talked to the lady who was running the church in Cambridge. And she said to me, John's been passed for the last 4 months. He said, you couldn't possibly have had a conversation with him on the phone.
Oh, my God. Oh, my good Lord. Oh, my Lord. That has just made me go cold. And you had a full conversation with him on that phone.
Yeah, just a normal conversation like I'm having with you about catching up, about the things that have been
wow.
going on, just life in general, just what had been
wow.
happening in my local area. Yeah, he'd been my friend and we were just mates and we wanted to talk. And so I didn't even consider it anything until I walked into that spiritualist church, which I was a member of, and had a chat with the lady there who ran the church. And she told me that he passed, a few months before the phone call. And
oh.
That to me, I've documented it in a few books and I've talked about it on a few occasions, but I have no explanation for it.
Wow. So he could have been calling you from the great beyond and having a conversation with you, or that perhaps he was in still his world and you're in this one, and like, you know, from his side of life that he considered like Earth, because a lot of people describe the other side as much more beautiful than Earth. And I always have this idea, and I hope it, and I know it's right to a degree, although we can't prove it, that when we pass, there is a period where we transist to what they call the other side. I think the chilling part that would really worry me, Dominic, is just, you know, the soul finding another body to occupy. My argument would be, what would happen if all the bodies died? If the earth was destroyed, where would these souls go to? Yeah. Unless, of course, they go to different spheres of awareness in different realities, we don't know.
I've got a theory. Because you go back to the 15th century.
Oh, yes.
What was the population on Earth in the 15th century?
Exactly. It wasn't as big as it is today.
No, it wasn't. No, today, what is it about?
Where have they all come from? Yeah, I know what you mean.
7 to 8 billion. But I want to introduce the fact that we now know that every star system in our particular solar system and our particular galaxy has a set of planets. We sort of getting to know that planets are pretty commonplace. There's going to be there's going to be millions, trillions of Earth-like planets throughout the universe that we know, and maybe the multiverse that we don't know. So could it be that souls exist on many different planets, many different places, and at some point, at some time, they transcend between different planets? So there's some total number of souls, but those souls exist in different locations throughout our universe.
There could be. And also the idea that we are all one, but we've separated into billions upon billions of pieces, sections, that is going through all of this experience and then bring it all back to the one that we're part of.
Yeah.
But we have to think of that as well, that we've, you know, the one is split and splitting even more and finding out more about itself through its own creation and going through these varied incarnations and experiences and whatever. We just don't know. And I think that the ideas that you have and the ideas that I have, like many other people, are all warranted and have to be respected, because at the end of the day, we just don't know. And it is kind of frightening, I think, as well, when you think about that, because it's the unknown. It's not what we're knowing at this moment. But by God, we want to know.
and we will know if we open conversations to find out.
Absolutely. Totally.
And I think that's going to be something that we can explore at future times, and by writing books like your book, you know. Yeah, and by actually having conversations like we have on this particular show.
And your books as well.
Well, I've got my books as well. But the whole point is we can actually come together and start to understand things a little bit differently, a little bit better than what we may have done before.
Absolutely.
So Philip, before we go, because we're now coming up to time, we have to close.
Wow.
I know, it goes so fast, doesn't it? We could probably carry on for another hour, couldn't we? No problem at all. Maybe that will be in February when we start talking about your book when it's published. Tell the listeners where they can find you, where they can find your books, and if they want to contact you, if they want anything from you that you do. So this is your chance to tell them all about what they can do if they come to you and what you can do for them.
Well, most of my other books are out of print now from publishers where we were contracted from them. But now Amazon is the place to get all new books. So you can check me out on Amazon. I have a book there at the moment called You, the Public Deceived, The Grand UFO Deception. Another book called Guardians of the Dead, which deals with the afterlife. A Passage to Eternity, The Enigma of the Dead, UFOs and the Aliens. And Sky Crash Throughout Time. And they're available on Amazon. My identical twin brother and I have a website called www.thekinsellatwins.com. And I have a website which is called www.philipkinsella, just simply that, .com. And on Facebook, social media, where you can find nearly all of us, any one of us today. But yeah, that's how you can get hold of me.
Okay, so this has been a fascinating conversation, Philip. I really
Thank
enjoyed
you.
The time, your company.
And yours.
And you know, I think that some of the subjects that we're talking about now are going to be cutting edge in the future. You're going to start finding more and more people being more interested in some of the phenomenons that we've been discussing. So I'm hoping that we're able to start that ball rolling. So people can start looking at it, because
passing that mantle onto someone else. That's what it's all about.
Well, I think all knowledge is there. We just got to access it, but it's accessing it and giving that trail for people who follow from where we started. And that's really what we're about here on Dial the Cosmos. So,
yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Dominic.
Well, my pleasure. Until next time, and next time we speak, you look after yourself and Ron, your brother.
Yes.
And no doubt we'll talk in the very near future. But until then, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you, Dominic, for having me on your show. Thank you. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just stopping the recording, I think, if I can find the button. It's good. Hang on there.